Hello and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod with me, Chris Shaw. Throughout January 2022, a potpourri of delicious guests are taking a jaunty stroll through Peter Jackson's Get Back, day by day, every day, on the day. In this episode, I'm joined by author and illustrator, Nadia Shireen. Hello.
Hi.
How was Get Back for you?
Oh, that is a big question. It's, do you know, I was looking forward to it, obviously, but I think I'd underestimated how amazing it was going to be. I didn't quite realise how much I needed it. I mean, it's been a grim old time for us, hasn't it, the last couple of years. And I think this has just arrived like some supernatural gift. I don't know, it's blown me away. And I've had a really emotional response to it. Lots of my friends who have seen it have felt the same. We've all been a bit taken aback by how much it's meant and kind of how emotional we felt. And that's been my Get Back experience so far. I'm kind of halfway through. I've kind of seen it 2.5 times, I feel like saying. Because I've gone through it twice, but then like little bits of certain episodes I've kind of seen a bit more and, you know. Because there's a lot to immerse yourself in. I mean, I don't think you can pick everything up the first time. The first time I was in shock. I was just in shock that I was hanging out with the Beatles.
Yes, yeah.
And I spent most of the first viewing just going, oh my God. Oh my God, did you hear what he just said? Oh my, I can't, look at how they looked at each other. And then just gasping. It's a beautifully realised project.
It really is.
Really is.
I did enjoy your, you tweeted yesterday, a photo of Sergeant David Kendrick. And you've spotted a similarity.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice. I mean, I'm obsessed by the Police at the end of the rooftop concert. They make me laugh so much. You've got, you know, the two Rays, like the Piranha Brothers, just kind of chewing their helmet straps. But then, what was his name again? David Kendrick.
Sergeant David Kendrick.
Sergeant David Kendrick rolls onto the scene. And I realised he looked just like the copper in Yellow Submarine at the beginning. Who does. The Yellow Submarine is evading him and he's like, here, puss. Yeah, the one he bends down to stroke the cat. I was like, it's him. But of course, sadly, I mean, it's just a nice fluke, isn't it? Because obviously, Yellow Submarine predates it, obviously. But funny.
Brilliant. So today we're talking about day 6. This is Thursday, the 9th of January.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lovely opening scene because Paul arrives with Linda for the first time. And he introduces her to Michael Lindsay-Hogg and Tony the cameraman.
Yeah. Michael Lindsay-Hogg's reply is slightly creepy, isn't it? Like, nicest cameraman I've ever seen, or something like that. sorry, Michael Lindsay-Hogg. I'm sure he's a good guy, but anyway, maybe that's a road I should go down later.
We've got a lot to thank him for having all this footage.
Yeah, we do. We do. And the thing is that the first, I was quite annoyed by him on my first watch. But then, as you say, it's thanks to him. And he is a fan, isn't he? And that's ultimately, you just kind of think, well, he's just really carried away. He's just a powerful, wealthy fan.
Yeah.
Who can do this?
He worked with them on the Paperback Writer and Rain and Hey Jude videos. So they'd stuck with him for quite a while because a few people have said about, you know, they can't believe the way he speaks to them. But they obviously trusted and respected him.
Yeah, they obviously really did, else he wouldn't have been there. They wouldn't have entrusted him with the project. And as you say, it's not like it was the first time they'd encountered him. I suppose it's the first time we're encountering him in three-dimensionally in proximity to the Beatles. But I mean, that shock, you know, that sensation isn't just, I didn't just have that about Michael Lindsay-Hogg. I had that with like Mal Evans, for example.
Mal,
because, you know, it's like, wow, we're seeing him interact with them in real life, in real time. And that's a different thing to kind of still photos of him with, you know, with the band. Anyway, I'm digressing. Yeah, Paul and Linda. I mean, you've given me such a cracker of a day to talk about. Linda and Paul are so in love. It's palpable. And I just love that he kind of swoops in with his, you know, he's decided Linda's the love of his life pretty quickly, I think. And then just, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but then just kind of saunters over to the piano and does a little bit of showing off, doesn't he?
A bit, isn't it? I thought that.
I think so. Like, oh, yeah, Linda's in. Oh, I've just done 4 or 5 amazing
put some
songs.
Piano practice in, you know?
Yeah.
He's never done piano practice in his life.
No, but he decided to that morning. But, I mean, she looks absolutely beautiful and... And the photos that she, you know, I love that she's just snapping away and she gets some beautiful shots over the day.
And she's not overawed by it. You know, this huge scene that she's just walked into, huge Twickenham Studios.
She's really not, is she? She's so...
She's very cool.
She's super cool, really self-assured. How I don't know how long she and Paul had been together for at this point.
Oh, not long at all.
They'd not been... They weren't married, were they? But it was all... It was all really, I mean, yeah, they're obviously just head over heels. Do you think she came to visit because Paul maybe thought, oh, Yoko's here every day?
I wonder, yeah. It's got to be a point where he's thinking, right, well, Yoko's here all the time. Why can't I bring my girlfriend in as well? And traditionally, it never really been the case. There's a few exceptions, actually. I mean, the White Album, for a start. But I think, yeah, that there was a hint of that. I don't know.
No, I don't know. But you're right. She's completely self-assured. And I imagine that was probably part of the appeal for Paul that, you know, she was just very comfortable in her. Or she appears to be. I mean, I'm basing this just on the footage. She appears to be just so self-assured. And later on, you know, her and Yoko chatting. Oh, what I'd give to know what they were chatting about.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be
fascinating? They seem all smiles, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I don't know much about you. Can tell me because I'm, yeah, you know, I'm an enthusiast rather than a brilliant kind of Beatles fact file, walking fact file. So I don't know the ins and outs of it. Like, what? How did they get along?
They weren't the best of friends, I think. Reading just from all the stuff I've read, most of the comments John made about Linda weren't exactly complimentary, but they weren't horrible, but it was more a case of, I think it was more about him and Paul.
And, yeah.
Well, who's this woman coming between us?
Mm.
Which is, you know, perhaps a bit hypocritical, but then John is John, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, there's a lot to be said about, I mean, just, you know, broadly, you haven't asked me this question, but you've just made me think about it. I've always been team Paul, not that we need to have a team. You know, I'm obviously team Beatles, but, you know, a huge Paul fan. Have been ever since I was kind of conscious of the Beatles, which was from age 0, I guess. But Get Back has made me feel a lot warmer towards John. You know, it's really, I don't know. Yeah, I feel much more well disposed towards him, and he seems less cruel, and he seems kinder, and he seems, for all his kind of snarkiness and sneering, he's full of love. You can see that he loves them, and that's been great to see. And also that him and Yoko, it's all about him and Yoko. It's not really about. I've read some theories where it's like, oh, Yoko's entire. You know, her being at the Get Back sessions was this very sophisticated piece of performance art. I don't know if I necessarily subscribe to that. I really think it's more about her and John being together, end of.
Yeah, completely. Paul was aware of that as well, wasn't he? He made some comments.
Yeah, which about, was really...
You know, he knows it's them.
Yeah, and it's almost so... You almost... Some of the lines in Get Back, I was like, is this being scripted? Because it's amazing. When he says, oh, you know, people aren't going to say the Beatles broke up because Yoko sat on an amp. It's like, yes, Paul, they will say that for decades.
Yeah.
But going back to how Yoko and Linda interact, I think, as you say, then, it sounds like an extension of John's general, almost sort of adolescent mistrust of family, of being a husband, of being a dad. Paul was very comfortable in that role from the off. and
also his convention as well.
Absolutely.
Everything he did was deliberately unconventional.
Yeah, willfully. And I guess Paul didn't necessarily see the excitement or the creative. He didn't get a creative buzz out of being kind of unconventional in his private life, maybe because his family life, apart from his mum obviously passing away, was so kind of complete and warm and full of love. Mm. And, you know, he had his dad, whereas John didn't. So I sometimes think we talk a lot about kind of the effect that both Paul and John losing their mums had on them. But I do think another interesting kind of angle on it is the kind of dads they had.
Yeah.
And how secure or didn't. And how that then affected John's idea of what he needed to be as a kind of counterculture rock star and, you know, a kind of mess with the system. And so, of course, I guess he would kind of look down on Paul and Linda wanting to go and live on a farm and have kids and be conventional. I've gone round the houses. I haven't spoken much about...
We're still on the first minute.
I'm sorry.
Paul's still doing his piano practice as Dennis O'Dell discovers the flights to Tripoli that they've been talking about is 6 hours long.
What were they thinking? Did they imagine it would be like an hour?
I don't know. It was never gonna work. But Paul's playing Another Day, his first solo single on the
piano. I mean, that was thrilling. So one of the reasons I'm so happy you chose this day is because this first 10 minutes, I was just gasping and kind of like, oh my God, oh my God. And Another Day, so thrilling to hear that. I absolutely love that song. And it kind of underlines what we've just been talking about, the kind of, he's so brilliant at writing about, you know, a normal woman, in inverted commas, day, and kind of finding the poetry and kind of domesticity. And yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely to see.
Yeah. And again, you say some of this sounds scripted, but Mal leans over.
Mm.
He's just saying, have you got any more song lyrics I need to write for them? And Paul sort of goes, it's like a Hollywood drama. It's like, yeah. And then introduces Long and Winding Road.
It's like it could have been on like a Channel 5 TV movie. You'd say, oh, that's a bit naff. Can you maybe, you know, can you write it in a bit more obliquely? This one. It's just, yeah, you kind of have to... He burst out laughing at that point, just the way he nonchalantly reels it off. And then is it that one where he's playing it for Mal and Mal's just chatting about other stuff, like, so what do you think about, it's like, Mal, be quiet. Be quiet, you're hearing the Long and Winding Road for the first time.
Yeah, this is one of the moments, like you said before, where Mal suddenly becomes 3D and not just a photo, because you realize that, because he's saying, you know, Paul's coming up with these ideas like, gathered all the pleasure from the many ways I've tried. You left me waiting here. Then Mal, no, you standing.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you like standing better? Yeah.
Isn't
waiting
that amazing?
There, standing there.
Isn't that amazing? And he does. It's brilliant to see, and kind of those little moments. You don't realize how. I'm sure Mal wasn't there kind of with every song pitching lines in, but you just see how comfortable they are with each other. I love that. Yeah. They've essentially kept the dude from the cavern just hanging around in their bubble. And they're just so close. And the fact that Mal's comfortable enough to interrupt him and say, nah, do this. And it's just kind of mind-blowing to watch.
Well, it suggests that it happens a lot.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Very comfortable and Paul accepts it straight away.
Well, yeah, there's absolutely no ego. I think that's the thing that struck me about all of the sessions. I mean, I know there are points where, obviously, you know, where they got on each other's nerves. I mean, there are obvious moments, you know, like with George, you know, the day after this. But they are, I think their egos are pretty, musically, their egos are pretty well kept in check. Like, they are quite comfortable with other people pitching in and pitching, I don't know, maybe it's a naive thing to say, but this looked to me to be quite comfortable with kind of exchanging ideas, despite the big kind of accusation, you know, that Paul's opinions kind of counted for more and that no one else could get a word in. I think actually looking at this objectively, you all do get a chance to get a word in.
Oh, yeah.
you know, they all have completely. The opportunity to. It's just whether or not they have the will to. I think George's will to do that is flattened. If he had gone into it with as much enthusiasm as Macca and gone, no, no, which he does do later on. But, you know, at this stage in Twickenham, they're, you know, when they're kind of all a bit silent and sullen and petulant, it's like, well, don't moan about not having your ideas in the mix if you don't put your ideas on the table. Anyway, I'm sounding like Macca now.
Because then they, Mal and Paul, they're talking about possible venues. And, and now it's got to be indoors. And Paul suggests a farm in Scotland.
Yes.
He's only kidding.
Yeah.
And then Linda mentions, I'd love to find a farm.
Again, it's another channel. It's another Channel 5 TV movie moment, isn't it? Where it's like, imagine a farm in Scotland. What did that... We'd really, like, find our wins. Yeah.
We'd really get back to the egg.
Yeah.
And so on. But she, I love the way she calls him Ring. I feel most relaxed around Ring.
I know. That's so sweet. That's so sweet. But like you say, they've not been going out for that long, but she's already... what do you think? She invented Ring as a nickname? Nah. Probably picked it up off Paul. Yeah, Ring. I mean, Ring. I found Ring for this first week in Twickenham frustratingly passive. He's great. He's enthusiastic. And I loved that bit where he's saying, watching Paul. I know, again, this isn't today. Sorry. And just saying, oh, I could watch him play for hours, you know, just doing this.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know, he doesn't, when it all kicks off tomorrow, I shouldn't talk about this, Chris, should I? Sorry, I realise I'm skipping around.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm skipping around
all
over the place.
We're in real time.
I'm skipping around all over the place. Yeah, we're in real time. So I predict tomorrow there's going to be a bit of a flare-up. And I predict that I reckon tomorrow there's going to be a bit of a flare-up. And I reckon Ringo is just not going to say anything. And that frustrates me.
Mm.
But, you know, yes, Ring is a nice nickname. But of course she'd feel most
depending
comfortable.
On how you...
But of course she would feel most comfortable, I guess, around him. Because he such a sweetheart and just sweet and funny and kind and doesn't... You know, George and John are both a bit hard-edged at this point, aren't they, with Paul? So it's no surprise, really.
So Paul's still tinkling away. And then, oh, Golden Slumbers.
Well, this
just from nowhere.
I mean, that... Do you think he'd come up with it, like, the night before? Had it been bubbling around for a while?
Yeah.
When this moment happened, I did start crying because it's just it's one of my all-time favorite pieces of music. I'm sure I'm not alone in that, but it's just so beautiful. My little boy has a bedtime playlist that he listens to every night before bed, and this was on it for quite a long time. So I loved it anyway, and then whenever I hear it now, I associate it with Lying in the Dark with my son, getting him to sleep. And it's just, I just had a really, this was one of the times I had a really emotional, visceral response, was him just gently rolling out Golden Slumbers. And it was interesting. I didn't know that it was derived from a folk song. I didn't know that.
Yeah, almost word for word. But he's,
right.
He's done his own tune. Yeah, at this point, he was thinking of taking it down a fairy tale route. So it's like, once upon a time, there lived a princess.
Quite
once
glad.
There lived a king.
Quite glad he didn't do that. I'm quite glad he didn't do that. But, you know, when he said that, it put me in mind of that song he did. So I'm 43. I tell you my age because I think it's quite relevant when you hear what I'm about to say about my Beatles / Paul McCartney fandom, which was that so my big brother's an absolute Beatle nut. He does a David Bowie podcast, but he is also a complete Beatles nut. And he clamped headphones on my head from when I was a very small, very young age. And so I kind of grew up with the Beatles in the way that many children grew up with them through their parents. So simultaneously, I was kind of learning about the Beatles and watching the complete Beatles on VHS and seeing Paul McCartney in black and white as a young man. And then I was seeing him on Hearty, promoting Pipes of Peace or promoting Give My Regards to Broad Street. So he was all these people at the same time, which was quite overwhelming. So I was deeply, deeply in love with him from a young age. The first LP I ever got was a gift from my brother, actually, and it was Press to Play.
Oof,
I know, which I therefore have a bit of a soft spot for. It's not great, but anyway. And isn't Once Upon a Long Ago on Press to Play, or is that on a best?
That's on the best of.
Is it on All the Best? Which yes. Maybe came out not long after Press to Play.
That's it, yeah.
So when he was talking in Get Back, when he's talking about those Once There Was a King lyrics, it made me think of Once Upon a Long Ago, because that's got exactly the same, you know, that's got those qualities, that kind of children's fairy tale. He has got that side to him, that kind of bordering on saccharine. But also very beautiful. I love the melody to Once Upon a Long Ago. I think it's very sweet. And I think it's not a million miles away from... It could be in the same universe as Golden Slumbers.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's as good. Please don't write in or shout at me. I know it's not as good. I'm just saying I think they maybe share some colours of the same... I think they're from the same palette, maybe.
They are. So at this point, George arrives, he's late, and Paul tells George that he's got an idea for a song for Ringo. He said it's a bit like a story. And George is basically shoveling toast down his throat.
He does a bit of a pass-ag apology, George
does.
Yes,
he does.
Which I really, really noticed. Because it's the kind of thing I would do when I'm being pass-ag. Yeah. Where he's like, oh, if you want an excuse, that's why, And I felt for Paul, because Paul has to do I didn't want an excuse. He just sort of does a quick smiley shake of the head, like an embarrassed teacher. But anyway, carry on. Yeah, he just rolls out another song for Ringo.
Yeah, there's lots of moments like that where I think a lot of it's editing as well.
Do you think?
Because there's obviously the audio tapes, the Nagra tapes have been going for years.
Yeah.
And some bits, I think, have been cut. Not necessarily this bit, but I think some... bits have been cut to make it a bit more dramatic than perhaps it was, but it, you know, these things are ultimately said.
I was thinking about how, because I don't know, I mean, you obviously, I presume, know the Nagra tapes front to back, so I don't at all, you know, I've never heard them, and I wonder how different this lands if you're a big fan and a punter like me who's not heard the tapes. And then you see Get Back and there's so many surprises. Well, obviously, if you know the tapes, how does that feel? Were you still surprised? Were you still kind of blown away
definitely.
By stuff? Like, what were you most taken aback by?
I think a lot of it was conversations, because a lot of these tapes, they're all mono tapes. But Peter Jackson's amazing spectral stereo, where he can actually pull out vocals and pull out chat... So you can actually hear a lot of the conversations that previously might have been going on while they're strumbling away on the guitar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's tons of that in this. I think the main difference between the tapes, what we've got now, is that Yoko is definitely a lot more present on the audio tapes, where in this there's barely a moment that she speaks.
That's interesting.
And she's very, you know, she's putting her ideas together where they're talking about venues and this sort of thing. So she's definitely involved.
Do you think that was a deliberate... So is that a deliberate editorial decision to kind of maybe reframe the kind of lazy...
I reckon
she's been blamed for stuff. Do you think they kind of went...
I think so.
Right, that's interesting.
Because you've seen the stuff online. You just mentioned the word Yoko Ono. And all the trolls come zooming in.
I was amazed because I kind of thought generally we were all now in agreement that Yoko's place in history was, you know, I thought that we'd all generally had agreed to kind of be grown-ups and reevaluate the situation.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
So did I. There's always going to be people that don't, but they're obviously the ones that shout the loudest. So I wonder if that was one of the reasons. I don't know.
To shut the sexists and the racists up. Who knows?
But at this point, carry that weight actually has a verse.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's like, will I get drunk tonight? And blah, 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 blah.
It's quite jolly.
But it is, yeah. It's very different. They were best to use it as they did. But he says his the verse could be about, he got in trouble with the wife, got drunk.
So
and
glad.
Woke up the next morning with a weight upon my head and I found out it was my head.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that they made the decision they did. I'm fascinated to know how they got from A to B with that, or how Paul kind of salvaged the bit he did and decided to knit it together for Abbey Road. I'd be fascinated to know kind of how that happened.
He's the king of medley, isn't he, I guess?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, otherwise it sounded a little bit Maxwell Silver Hammery, didn't it? Like,
it did, yeah.
Like a kind of bawdy kind of pub sing-along.
Yeah. Paul then plays the instrumental, The Castle of the King of the Birds. And we get to see George on drums.
Yeah.
And he's good.
He's all right, isn't he? I was like, hey, he can do that. I mean, of course he can, I guess. But I've just never, ever seen it.
Yeah. Well, then you start thinking, he does a bit of a clumsy drum roll, but it's good.
It's not bad.
And then you think, yeah, imagine if he'd done like a McCartney in 1970, just him playing all the instruments, because he could have done it.
He absolutely could have done it. I think what do you think about his confidence levels? Do you think they really did take a bit of a battering?
I don't know. I think he got all of his confident boosts from people like Dylan and Clapton.
Yeah.
His, you know, circle of friends outside the Beatles. Yeah. They were the ones saying, oh, yeah, George, this is brilliant.
You're amazing. Yeah.
And, yeah, to release a triple album, you've got to be pretty confident. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, maybe I'm feeling a little bit too... I might be feeling a little bit too maternal towards him.
Oh.
Maybe.
At this point, George, we hear For You Blue.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Yeah.
John O'Reilly. Sorry.
No. I was just trying to think of something profound to say about that, but I can't really. apart from a sense of relief, anytime George is playing something of his own and seeming quite happy about it. That was my... Because as I say, I sense something strange might happen tomorrow, Chris. I don't know about
yes.
you. But I've been feeling foreboding from George's end of the room, and so I'm relieved when I see him playing a song. I think, yay, George, there you are. It's all okay.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it as well, just with all the chat, is that we now know exactly that this song was written on the evening of Wednesday the 8th of January 1969.
Yeah.
There's tons of that stuff here.
It's
you
nuts,
can now
isn't it?
Pinpoint when these songs are written.
You must have been having a hell of a time updating your dossiers. Your internal Beatles dossier must just been overtime, overwhelming. Because normally you might get a new photo or a new fact, what, every 6 months, every year?
That's it, yeah.
And now...
Well, I'm feeling for Mark Lewisohn.
Oh, my God,
we've just added another 10 years to his third part of the trilogy.
I know. Oh, well. It's like Game of Thrones, isn't it? George R. R. Martin. They finished the telly show before he's finished the books. Sorry, Mark.
Yeah. We've got to mention Glyn John's furry white bungle from Rainbow Jacket.
I adore this look. Can I just say, the men, I mean, this is a shallow thing, but the wardrobe in Get Back, it's amazing. And Glyn's... white bundle coat is an absolute highlight. I used to have a coat like that. When I was about 18, it was a big grey furry coat. Unfortunately, I didn't look like Glyn Johns. I looked like a very strange brown girl with an afro in a brown V-neck jumper and this giant coat and some Converse One Stars shuffling around indie discos in Sheffield. Every now and then, I've got big black curly hair, and every now and then someone would shout, "Oi, Macy Gray," at me, because it was...
Wow, because she was pretty cool.
It was that time. Yeah, I don't think they meant it in a cool way, though, when it was me kind of getting a tenner out of the cash point, the student union. But anyway, Glyn Johns, and just the way he pairs it with those sunglasses and his hair, I really, if he'd been at my sixth form college... I would have really fancied him. He looks just like the kind of lads I would have fancied at my sixth form college. But yeah, sorry, I'm really digressing. There's so much handsomeness and men in good clothes in Get Back, and a certain demographic of my female friends of my age who are watching this. We are all sharing our thoughts on these important matters privately.
There's a lot of similar feelings for George Martin as well.
Well, I certainly, I have. So, I mean, I'm not going to be as so crass as to do a top five of handsomeness in Get Back, but George Martin for me is at number two. He looks fabulous. And also, even though he's literally my age, he's 43 when this is happening, he still carries the air of like Gandalf, doesn't he? He's still how is that? Just eternally the eternal wise old man, but he looks fabulous, especially later on when he's in his black polo neck. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop, Chris, because I realise that your listeners are very erudite Beatle heads and they don't want to hear some sad woman getting breathless about George Martin. You're better than this. I'm sorry.
It is most of what we talk about on here, to be honest.
Okay.
Right, and next, it's the Get Back rehearsal.
Yeah.
At this point, they're going for very different lyrics.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about here.
Well, it starts off, doesn't it, with, and again, the editing is brilliant on this. It cuts to the front page of the Daily Mirror headline, warning to the premiers, no extra immigrants.
Mm.
And it mentions about Enoch Powell and the anti-immigrant movement in the UK. Again, the tapes that they haven't put on here are very interesting. You can hear them reading out and they're just taking the piss, saying, you know, how ridiculous it all is. I'm surprised they cut that out, actually, because it would have given it a bit more context, but... Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? Because at first, Paul is saying, oh, the lyrics aren't about anything. You know, they're just whatever. And then, in the film, like you say, there's this very, it's, again, kind of on the nose. Someone bringing in that paper. It is like a paper you'd mock up for a play about the Beatles. Right, in Get Back, because the headline is so, you know. And then they start singing, or Paul starts singing about, what's the line? I don't have it in front of me, but about the Pakistani...
Yeah, Sidi Abdul Rami was a Pakistani, but he didn't live at home.
I remember when. So I was trying... I've been struggling to remember when I first heard about these apocryphal... Well, they're not apocryphal, but, you know, these outtakes, these lyrics. Mm. Maybe it was... I feel like it might have been in the early noughties, maybe, because that's when the NAGRA tapes were kind of more widely circulated. Is that right? Just because of...
Oh, they were everywhere. Yeah.
They were everywhere before there, I guess. But do you think there was like an uptick in terms of how much they were shared because of the internet, because of LimeWire?
I guess so. Yes, LimeWire, wasn't it? Napster
and all of that. Because I don't remember hearing about those lyrics before then. But then, as I say, I was not exactly... studying the NAGRA tapes, so I guess people have known about them for a while.
Definitely.
And I would have heard about them secondhand, either through an article or maybe my brother told me, or maybe, you know, I read it somewhere. And I'm of Pakistani descent, and I remember feeling massively alarmed and depressed and kind of worried when I heard about this the first time round, because, I don't know, guess we live in a slightly different time now, but even back then, you know, Morrissey was, I'd already been disappointed and kind of bruised once. And this is going back to when Morrissey was releasing like Bengalian Platform. So, you know, I had known that pop stars disappointing you because they are commenting about race in a way that you suspect, you feel on some kind of cellular level is not positive. Because you've got to remember the kind of Morrissey racism outrage has only happened in the last, well, it did happen with the NME famously with him wrapping himself in a flag and all of that. But, you know, it's more widespread now.
Mm.
So what I'm clumsily trying to say is that when I first heard about these Get Back lyrics, I felt a bit wobbly in my stomach, but it's not like anyone else massively was, is what I mean. So I was like, well, it can't, like, he wouldn't have meant it that way. you know, just my kind of love. it would just go against everything I know the Beatles to be, everything I know Paul McCartney to be. Surely it would not be this. But I think I've got a feeling that the piece that I read at the time was maybe a little bit myopic and was kind of selling it as, oh, the racist lyrics they didn't want you to hear. I think it was kind of being sold in that way. And it has been, I think you can still find articles where it is sold that way online, can't you?
Mm.
Where there's absolutely no context. So to see the newspaper and to see it all fleshed out, and it does matter that you see it as well as hear it, to see their expressions and just to pick up the vibe of how these things have been sung about, and you know, this goes into Commonwealth as well, makes a huge difference. It was really reassuring. I found it really reassuring. I turned to my brother and said, oh, isn't this reassuring? And he was like, yeah. And he has more knowledge about all this stuff than me, so he probably had more context, because he would be a Nagra Tapes, you know, listener. He maybe had more context the whole time, but I didn't. So for me, it was like a sigh of relief. Just to have it confirmed that, like, these people that I love had good intentions, and it was maybe... I don't know, because then he was like, oh, it's a protest song. And I don't know if... I mean, they sort of abandoned the whole idea, didn't they?
Mm.
Of it being completely. A protest song. They just completely... So it's interesting. It started with Paul admitting it was about nothing. Then they have this flirtation, this dalliance with it being a protest song about Enoch Powell and all the rest of it. And then they abandoned it completely. And I wonder why they abandoned it. I mean, I'm kind of relieved they did. I wonder if they feared it would be open to misinterpretation.
Well... Hence, you know, they were right. If you were
absolutely it's weird, right,
because I heard these back in the 90s on the there was loads of CDs appearing, and it was kind of obvious it was taking the piss to me, but then I had a bit more context on the tapes, and I remember all the stuff on the internet coming out, thinking, well, they haven't listened, it's clearly not. And if it's sold to, if that's how you found out about it and it was sold to you, you know, you're gonna think. And loads of people are going to think that. And it still comes up now. If you mention Get Back, oh, well, what about the original lyrics? Yeah, what about them? They were a bit too close to the... And I think Jason Hazy was on before. He said if they had released that, it would have been like Alf Garnett.
Yeah.
It would have attracted exactly the people that is taking the piss out of.
Yeah, it would have been like Born in the USA, Springsteen. It would have been like that kind of thing. Yeah. God, it's funny, isn't it? Well, it's not funny. It's kind of depressing. but also, it was genuinely reassuring to me. And not that I'd been going around for years thinking that that was their intention, but I don't know how to articulate the kind of how it can make you, that kind of uncomfortable little frisson of worry that you have. That you might have, you know, that you might have if when you're, and I've had these things happen, like when a friend of yours would say something unknowingly quite racist, and you love your friend, you adore them, but they've just said something racist that they would never even realise they'd said. But you sort of never forget it. You sort of carry it around. And that's a little bit how I felt about, you know, when I read those articles about Get Back. I was like, there's surely some mistake. And you know what? Yes, there was.
yes.
Yeah. And I just think he really enjoyed, also, I think a lot of it was probably, I'm not saying that Paul doesn't care about these things, but he really cares about how words sound. And I think he just, probably a lot of it was just really enjoying playing with the names and the words and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't just a political decision to abandon it. Maybe it was just the other words sounded better.
Well, things, because on Commonwealth... Well, you got John's which I think is lovely, and he's got a line, so I went to Pakistan, I went to India, I've been to Calcutta, and he's just throwing out words that sound good. Calcutta, you know, it's
exactly,
it's all these sort of things. I think
so as well, and I think at the same time, they're playing with that idea, and John does his silly old woman voice, but I tell you what, I could leave Commonwealth behind. That's fine.
Calcutta was Kenneth Tynan's Erotic Review, for which John Lennon wrote a sketch.
Right.
Called Four in Hand.
Oh, God.
It's very rude.
Oh, John, you... masturbation. John, you wag. He makes a good masturbation joke in Get Back, doesn't he? I think we've probably...
He does.
Has that gone... Have we had that? I think we've had that already.
We can tell it again.
Oh, it's something terribly rude about the Boy Scouts, isn't it? I can't remember.
Well, he's wearing his glasses, isn't he?
Oh, so, yeah, that's
right. Doesn't make you go blind.
He's short-sighted. Oh, John.
But yeah, Four in Hand by John Lennon, if you want to read. Very naughty thing indeed.
Okay.
So, she came in through the bathroom once more with Felix.
Yeah.
And John's on piano.
Yeah. Oh, which I've... No, I was about to say something really stupid, like I've never seen him play the piano, but of course I have. Of course I have, but...
Think of one.
Can I think of any time I've... No. I have, but I suppose it's just, it was just, you know, in the context of Get Back, I don't... Yeah. I think this is... Is this the only time he plays the piano?
He does mess around with it. Yeah, he's playing keyboards.
Does he mess around with the keyboards later on? Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten. Anyway.
But he's doing his little, get a job, cop!
Oh, yeah. But where?
It's all the way through, isn't it? And Paul's, and got myself a steady job. Bloody about time, too, if you ask me.
I mean, I can imagine that if you weren't in the mood, that'd be quite irritating, wouldn't it? Paul's very happy with it. I think Paul thinks, oh, this means John's in a good mood. But I reckon that there are a few times later on where he's kind of going over and over the opening verse to Let It Be, which I always think is slightly like, God, he's talking about his mum and oh. And then John's like, kind of, you know, playing his comedy trombone and coming in with a feeble gag. It's like, God, shut up, John. Leave him alone. Yeah.
We do get a couple more... Because George says, well, should we do other people's tunes? So you get brief snippets of Honey Hush and Susie Parker. Very brief, which is a really great. It's one of the great sort of unreleased Beatles songs.
Yeah, right.
You barely see it here.
Well, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's why. Maybe that's the reason that it's already been, I don't know. I'm not a big fan, if I'm honest. I'm sorry.
But then we get, for me, one of the highlights is George's beautiful version of Bob Dylan's Mama, You've Been On My Mind.
Oh, God, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's just... Yeah, it's just absolutely beautiful. Did he ever release that as a cover?
He recorded it for Living in the Material World, but didn't use it. But you can hear... They released an album, Early Takes, Volume 1. And you can hear his 70s version of it.
It's just... it just suits his... voice beautifully, and it's not, I think it's probably really easy to do a Dylan imitation when you're covering one of his songs, but George doesn't do that. It's so beautiful. And also while you're listening to it, you see Paul and Linda kind of just having this really tender moment with each other. It's really beautiful and really kind of, you know, there's a storm on the horizon, but it kind of doesn't feel like it. This doesn't... Do you know what I mean? I was kind of lulled... When I was watching this, I was almost lulled into a false sense of security. Like, well, this is beautiful. Everyone's working really well. And George is settled and he's sounding fantastic and Linda's here and, hey, everything's going to be okay, guys.
That feeling I had about tomorrow, no.
Yeah,
it's going to be fine.
I think tomorrow's going to be the best day for us ever.
Because the thing about this song as well, George had been to visit Bob in Woodstock pretty recently, and this song was never released at the time. It was originally recorded for Another Side of Bob Dylan.
Right.
But he didn't include it. So it's like George has been there and he's come back and said, here, lads, look, here's...
Listen to this.
A Bob Dylan song no one's ever heard.
So Bob was the closest to George by miles, wasn't he?
Mm.
Oh, of course he was. So how could I forget the Travelling Wilburys? It's all coming back to me.
Mm. But it is. It's the lyrics, I think, because it's... Perhaps it's the colour of the sun cut flat and covering the crossroads I'm standing at. Or maybe it's the weather or something like that. But, Mama, you've been on my mind. When you wake up in the morning, baby, look inside your mirror. You know I want to be next to you. And there is an air of something very deep about that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also, it's interesting what you say about how George at the time, maybe because he felt stifled by Paul and John, maybe, you know, it meant he opened up more to the other people around him, to his other peers, and was maybe more receptive to their influence, or kind of, you know, maybe it was a it must have been a positive thing for his own songwriting, because if options are kind of closed off to you and he couldn't penetrate John and Paul's, you know, you see those sparks when John and Paul are just doing something supernatural, when they're looking into each other's eyes and they're molding something. You don't see it as much, I suppose, in Get Back as we would have seen if this documentary had been made a few years previous, but you do see moments of it, and you can see that George can't really penetrate those moments. So maybe it kind of forced him to look elsewhere, and maybe it helped him develop his own voice. His own voice is pretty well developed at this point, though, isn't it? Like you say, it's not like he was short. He's not short of ideas, and he's not short of tunes.
No.
By any means.
No one else wants to hear them.
It's just his bad luck that no one else wants to hear them. And it's his bad luck he's in a band with Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
He kind of knew his place. You know, he was always going to be third place. Whatever, you know, even something in Here Comes the Sun later on.
Yeah.
He was still going to be the third Beatle.
Nuts, isn't it? Bless him. But yeah, that's a beautiful version. And I'm no Dylan head. It may surprise you, but I thought that was really gorgeous.
Yeah. Then Let It Be. And again, talking about 3D characters, Glyn Johns.
Yeah.
Actively comes up with ideas.
I know. Yeah, and Paul at one point says, oh, Glyn's arranging this, it seems.
Yeah.
What is it that he's... Oh, no, that's right. It's the descending... It's that... Yeah, yeah. And he absolutely correctly kind of slows it down, doesn't he? It's like you're kind of rushing... You're tumbling down this and you need to slow it down. And that's great to see, because I really feel for Glyn Johns. I feel like he looked so lost and a little bit... Even though he's like such an accomplished producer at this point, you know, it's not like he's a newbie, but he does, I feel like he feels a little bit out of his depth at points.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Because you, as the head, you're going to know a lot more about this than I, but it seems to me that they were like, no, we don't want George, you know, we don't want those old ways of working. Let's, you know, we'll work with Glyn Johns. It'll be fresh. It'll be new. And then they kind of, he doesn't really know how to deal with them. Brilliantly, I don't think. And then George is just like, don't worry, Glyn, I'm here. And is very,
yes.
very decent about letting Glyn be the producer and stepping aside. But he is still there steering the ship, isn't he?
I think it's very much George Martin and Glyn Johns are like the sorcerer and the sorcerer's apprentice.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that kind of authority of George. And it must be weird for Glyn, knowing that he's stepping into... You know, his friend,
right?
He should be doing this,
but he's stepping into the role. But then, so hard for him to judge how much he is meant to do. Then, because yeah, George is there, as you say, over his shoulder. Even though he's trying not to be over his shoulder, I'm sure he's been extremely decent to him. But Glyn is not going to be able to be fully Glyn, and it's the Beatles who are probably very complicated to work with. And I think they really like Glyn, but I don't think they respect him or revere him in the same way that they do George. I think that's really apparent.
It's interesting how when Mal puts in his ideas for the song, it's like, yeah, okay, right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to change that direct. But when Glyn does it, it's like, oh, look at Glyn putting in the ideas.
It is a bit, isn't it? And they seem a bit irritated with him sometimes when he's like, because he's just not quite clicked with their rhythm of how they speak with each other, I don't think. He does seem quite shy. He's hiding behind the glasses and his fads and being kind of pretty. And he's like, shall we record now? Like, Paul will start and he'll go, okay, shall we record? And Paul's like, what? Like, he'll be a bit irritated that Glyn's interrupted him to say we're recording. He's like, yeah, just do it. What is it? You know, just get on with the job. And I think there are a few times that happens and I really feel for Glyn. But, you know, he's absolutely right about Let It Be. And I found Let It Be. I was chatting with a mate about this a couple of days ago. Let It Be is an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's just one of those songs that's become so maybe overplayed that it's not a song anymore. You know, like Bohemian Rhapsody, or actually for me, Yesterday is the ultimate example of this. I can't really recognize Yesterday or appreciate Yesterday as a song anymore, because it's always been something else. So it's very hard for me to listen to. Let It Be has occasionally felt like that. Hasn't been helped by dodgy live versions, kind of communal events.
There's a lot of them about.
But hearing it in this context, it really just gets me right in the guts, gets me in the heart. So beautiful. Just seeing him building it. And it's just gorgeous.
It's a positive end to the day. If you were Michael Lindsay Hogg, would you be looking forward to tomorrow?
I would be rubbing my hands, jumping up and down and saying, yeah, this is just going brilliantly. Today was amazing. Paul just knocked out about six of the best songs ever. George seems on good form. He does a beautiful Dylan cover. He played the drums. John seems to be a bit more with it. Seems to be a bit more in the room. I think he stopped drinking all that herbal tea or whatever it was that was going on that was making him a bit absent. And Ringo just seems as jolly as ever. I think it's going to be great, and I can't wait for us to go to Tripoli. That's what I'd be saying. Now find me a cigar.
Got to be a massive one as well.
Yeah, find me a massive cigar. I'm going to stride about looking like Toad of Toad Hall, even though I'm only 29 years old, however old he is. That's how I'd be feeling if I was MLH, as nobody called him.
What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know. It's going to be a cracker.
Nadia, Shireen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure, Chris. Thank you. Hey!